Welcome to Hockey Night in Scotland. Here's the whistle. Edinburgh, blocked by Aberdeen. McFinnigan to McDougall, to the other McDougall, to the other McDougall. Hold the phone, the McDougalls have gotten into a rammy. And he's been kilted, McDougall's been kilted. And the ice looks a wee bit cold.
Some things just make more sense in Canada. Like a Subaru with symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive.
Put down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Here we go. Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard around the table today. The returning Billy Jaffe, who's taking all the jobs, it seems, around here at Sportsnet. Hello, Billy, again. And
you want another one?
We welcome back. from Florida, our man, Doug McLean. Who's right back into the fire. Don't, gentlemen.
That's wrong. Just what? Say welcome back from home.
Welcome back from home, Florida. Now, when we say home, we have to be a little more specific. Are we talking out east? Are we talking down south? Where do you actually consider home, Doug?
Well, I didn't want people to have it confused with the guys that are down there working in Florida right now. The Kiprios, Cox, Elliot Friedman, and Strombo down there actually working.
Correct. Okay, so nonetheless, welcome back, Doug McLean. We're going to talk to a folk hero today. Speaking of Boca Raton, we're going to talk to an actual folk hero in Florida right now by way of Springfield. He is the president of the American Hockey League, CEO of that organization as well. And he is a folk hero amongst general managers because his league has issued in the 3-on-3 overtime, which has devalued and decreased the shootout something. And I suppose Ken Holland would be banging this drum loudest. Decrease the effects of the shootout. Now only 5% of games in the AHL are settled by the, as they call it, skills competition.
So we'll talk only to Dave 5%?
Correct. 5.7.
5.7. It's down 10% from last year.
Now,
and the NHL is 14.5, I want to say.
So how much of that has to do with the extra 2 minutes of overtime?
Part of it.
A good amount.
It's the extra couple of minutes, and it's taking a player off the ice as well after the whistle, right. After 3 minutes, so it goes to the 3-on-3.
Right. So the 3-on-3... What has a bigger, I would like to know if you go 5 minutes and you go 4-on-4 and try to get it to 3-on-3, what does the percentage end? 3%?
Great question.
I had it the other day and I don't remember. I'm so bad with numbers, but I had it and it's a fair amount. Yeah. It's a fair amount going to 3-on-3. I just say and I know it's been thrown out there already and I know they discussed it yesterday. Just start at 3-on-3. I'm really fine with that.
Because if you're going to go 4-on-4 to 3-on-3 and you only do it in a 5-minute period, because I got to believe the players are going to fight
short.
It. Well, but what happens if you go 4-on-4 for 4 minutes, one game, and then you go the next game, you go 2.5 minutes and 2.5 minutes. Yes. Is that fair to the other team?
Excellent point.
And that's my problem.
That is one of the issues. The way the American League does it.
You know what I'm saying
The whistle, the first whistle after 3 minutes, the American League does it. Mm-hmm. At that point, you switch from the 4-on-4 to the 3-on-3.
Right. Right.
Now,
that can even have
your point, you could go 5.5 minutes without a whistle.
Okay.
Right? We've seen it before.
Then you get to the shootout eventually if you don't. I mean, I know what you're saying. That's. Yeah. I don't personally, I don't have a problem with it.
But, I mean, if I lose in the shootout and I didn't get to the 3-on-3.
Yeah.
So start with the 3-on-3. If that's not the – then start at 3-on-3.
Yeah.
Just start at 3-on-3. And you know what? Less players will get tired.
Here's the problem. If it has to be fair to everybody. So how is it fair when it's 3 minutes for one team, 4 minutes for another, 5 for another – two and a half.
Have you talked to any of the American League? Any coaches, GMs grumbling there about it?
No, but they just
let's ask Dave.
Whatever they're told.
I would imagine it would if you're a head coach in a lot of ways to get down to the 3-on-3. And in a lot of ways, what you do is kind of moot. Like, isn't that a scenario where it's next to impossible to actually coach? When do you get down to 3-on-3? 5-on-5 is one thing. 4-on-4 is another. When you get down to 3-on-3, Doug, you've coached before. Yeah. How much coaching can go on 3-on-3?
Here's the interesting thing. All you want to do is put your good guys out.
Right? Open and close the gate.
And get your best guys. So I always used to think, geez, I don't want to go to 3-on-3 when I'm an expansion team because I'm up against Detroit and they're coming Dadzug, Zetterberg, Lidstrom, and I'm coming with
That's right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then they can come with the
for
next
those
three.
People on radio, those were three no-names.
No, but in fairness,
not the three expansion draft names right there.
They were no-names. They were just, you know, they were expansion players in the first three or so years. So, you know, that's the, and then the next three that come out for Detroit, or if it's, you know, I remember in those days it was Solani, Korea, you know, I mean, the top guys in the game coming at you for the three-on-three. I'm saying, I really don't want to touch that three-on-three. That's what
but you didn't.
In the meetings, that's what I thought about. I do not want to go three-on-three unless I'm a good team.
But you didn't hit it off in three-on-three. You rarely hit it, relatively speaking, in game.
No, I'm saying I didn't want to go three-on-three and over. Every time I come up in meetings, I'm out of the game, I'd like to see it.
Mm-hmm. From a fan's point of view, and we saw it last week in Boston, Tampa, and it was exciting.
It was wonderful
to watch. We sat there, Doug, on set doing the national game. We thought, this is fantastic. Yeah, this is so much fun to watch.
For a fan, I wanted it. But if
you're a coach, you're pulling your hair out.
Yeah, like for Kenny, I'm with Kenny on this one. I hope we can do it somehow, some way. To get the players to go 7 minutes is going to be a challenge. I think it will be. I think they'll fight it. You know, that'll be a stumbling block, an extra 2 minutes. And you know what it is? It's the best players. The best players. So in other words, Crosby's playing 24 minutes instead of 20 minutes, maybe, potentially.
Do you think it's a scenario, and we saw this in the Bob Goodnow regime more than any other regime, for every concession the players make, they want a cookie coming back the other way?
Why not?
Still that way. Hasn't changed.
Don't we play in an era right now where we continually present that we have more skilled players, better overall depth, less single-minded, read into that goon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we always talk about the best players, but if we have more guys with more skill, then let's keep playing some of those guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a counterbalance, too, that we should be able to, instead of Crosby going from 20 to 24, I don't see him playing 4 of the 5 minutes, let's just call it 5 minutes, okay?
Who are you going to go with? Spalling and who?
Why not? Well, you got Hornquist, you got Malkin, assuming health, obviously, Doug, but you start throwing out other guys, too. And I know they're going to play more. I get that.
But that's your most skilled team, you know? So let's say
have aspirations for those other teams that aren't as skilled and get better.
Yeah. I just think it's for the top team. Well, it's always going to be more
for the
better for the top teams. But as a GM of a poor team, I didn't want it.
We have a nice little situation here whereby we're in day two of the general manager's meetings in Boca, and we have a general manager sitting amongst us. What are these meetings like? We're on the outside looking in, knocking on the door, you know, glass to the door. What's going on in there? What's it like, Doug?
Well, you know, yesterday which is a typical day, you do the small group, and it's a brainstorming session, and you've got an assignment for your group, okay? Is it come up with a formula for goaltending interference? Come up with a formula for three-on-three? Come up for ideas and how to put things together, and you get five or six guys in a room, and they hammer away at some ideas. They bring them back to the total group. Today, they will get a little more in-depth into the issues and see if they can come up with a consensus. So it's interesting. I mean, they like to be out of there by 1 o'clock, most days, because it is a bit of a break for them. You know, and it gives them a chance to talk to one another. You know, the GMs, they like to spend some time with each other as to, you know, where their teams are. Not so much, more or less you hit with your buddies and you say, okay, where are we, you know, heading into the playoffs.
Are you supposed to mingle with people you don't know? That's what I was always told.
Well, they all know each other. So they're interesting meetings. And people say, well, they're going on. No, there's a lot of thought goes into these meetings. There's a lot of good ideas generated. You get 30 good, terrific hockey people.
Few meetings a year. What's the most valuable time that you would get together? What did you always look forward to?
I think this is one of the most valuable ones, because this is the one that takes it to the Board of Governors meeting for approvals for the following year. So I always found this one. Now, the one prior to the trade deadline is always an interesting one, because you get a chance to talk to fellow GMs face-to-face and do some of that. But this, to me, was always the bigger one. Mm-hmm. To put ideas and put, like, the goalie interference. Can they get a consensus to put the definition on the table to fix this problem? Can they come with a definition of three-on-three? I mean, look, they've beat these to death. I mean, like you mentioned.
These aren't new topics.
No, these are the same topics we've been doing for 2 years.
Which leads me to believe, not that you give up on it, but if they can't get an answer this year, do they start moving on?
But
this
tell
has
you.
Been 3 years, hasn't it?
Now well, really... Ken Holland continues to beat that drum about lowering the effects of the shootout.
Right.
And
I like
year
it.
Goes on, years go on, he seems to be picking up more favor and more steam. Yeah. And more GMs are going along with his plan.
Yeah, I like it. The one I'm anxious to see is, can they come with a definition? We watched goalie interference last week in the games,
yep,
and we had different opinions on it. Can they come with a – like, I've got to believe that Colin Campbell, Mike Murphy, Chris King and company can somehow formulate something with the help of the GMs that they can – fix this to 90%. But I don't know. It's complicated. And I listen to the GMs when you listen to a GM explain it to you.
Yeah.
It's that tight.
We talked about this yesterday. Even if you have video review, whether the referees are going to go have a look at a tablet in the penalty box, whether you're going to Murph in the war room, it's the same play, but it's different eyes looking at it. And we had the same thing last Thursday, Doug, in the San Jose game. You and Damian both looked at the same play and came up with different conclusions. Yeah,
well, I guess the question, and this would be maybe in the definition. If your player pushes an opposition player into your goaltender, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If Billy Jaffe's a defenseman against me and he pushes me into my own goaltender, is that goalie interference?
Yes.
I would say yes.
It is. It is. I think, isn't it? I don't have the book on me.
But that is the definition. That is one of the definitions of it,
right,
in the rule book.
In the rule book, right. It
sounds good to say, and it sounds great on paper, but there is so much gray in the game.
So you're telling
how
me.
Much, how
the
much
gray
is
in the
push,
game
because how much
you're
is
telling
a push.
Me.
There are some that are obvious.
So
when
just
you see
a
the arms extended, then it's obvious.
Okay, just a minute. If the goaltender's defenseman pushes an opposition forward into you, is that goalie interference?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The issue that we get to the fine line, gray line.
So everybody should push.
So hang on. If your own player pushes the opposition into you.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No, then that, it's not. No, then it's no, not. No, then it's no, not goalie okay. interference.
No, it's not goalie interference.
Well, that's what we watched the other night. That's what we watched the other night.
And they missed it.
You know, that Damian thought it was goalie interference. I said, no, his own guy pushed him in.
But in that scenario, and here's where it gets great.
Right.
That player is already going hard at the goaltender.
But he hadn't caught.
And it's at that last moment, we also see the defenseman, because he's on top
of
the crease.
He's going hard for the puck.
He's going hard for the puck, or he's going hard into the goaltender?
Well, that's what I want to know. All I saw was his own defenseman push the guy into him. And I said, that's where you get into some gray areas.
Well, there's a lot of gray areas.
But if you're going to do it, it's got to be the people at Hockey Ops making the call, in my opinion.
Can't be the officials going to the cabin in the penalty box?
I think it's when you've got 30 different officials.
Let me ask you a question.
The referees want it.
They feel responsible, and B, they feel like they know what they saw because they're in the heat of the moment. Give them that opportunity to take that step back to digest what they saw, and then they interpret the rules.
I had a great conversation with Rob Schick, who was a great NHL referee, and he and I had a discussion about it in the Stanley Cup Finals. And I mean, it's really interesting to get a referee's perspective, as mm-hmm. you just said. I mean, it's so fast. There's so much happening, and it's for Rob, who's a guy that did it, or a Bill McCree, these guys that have been in the trenches. I would love to hear their explanation. And I've got to believe that Hockey Ops have dealt with the referee, Steve Wacom's group, and all his supervisors, mm-hmm. and get great input from them, because it's a tough call. I hate it at playoff time.
Yeah.
When opening night of the playoffs, we've got umpteen situations with goalie interference.
Well, we also have a
backup.
With
Holmstrom gone now.
But there are others now. There are others that have slid into that vacuum.
And we don't have a backup official at every playoff game. You do as the series go on, correct? Yeah. I could be wrong here. But I know in the semis and the cup, or the conference finals and the cup, there are backup ref and backup linesmen are always there.
Right.
Those could be the guys looking at the video, too, saying to their – but we're getting ahead of our – we got to do this. We got to implement this in regular season first.
I want to see the definition. What they come with, because it has to be extremely tight. And I know they're having a tough time with it.
Of course.
Anything initiated by the netminder coming out to make a save outside of the crease, I think is black and white. I'm sorry, you're outside the crease.
Yeah.
Making your save outside, you initiate any contact. I think that that's not goaltender interference.
Okay, so then a player is in the blue then. Let me give you a scenario. A player is in the blue playing against, oh, let's just pick a goaltender for sake of argument, against Montreal. And Carey Price, and we've seen this before, deliberately tries to occupy the exact same place that that winger is standing.
In the crease.
In the crease.
Yep, okay.
Under the guise of, it's my blue.
Yep.
Right.
This is mine. And Price is the master of this. Is that goaltender interference?
Well, it depends. Does he flop?
No. Does he have to flop?
No, here's...
Well, listen, there has to be a shot, obviously.
Shot coming from the point. He goes and tries to occupy the same place where the winger is already standing.
He moves into that spot to move, and then he makes contact.
Right.
Well,
goalie initiates contact, but it's in his crease, right, even though the player is already established.
Was the player in the crease when the shot was taken?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
To me...
Is that goalie interference?
Yeah.
To me, that isn't.
Even though he's already got his space, because you can go into the blue paint.
You can go into
the crease.
Yes, you can.
You can go into the crease to do what?
To
you can't just stand there and get in front of the guys. You can't. I've seen that call this year.
A shot's coming in from the point,
yeah,
and that player is standing in the crease for a deflection.
Listen,
Carey Price, for sake of argument, goes out and bumps that player, puts himself
in
out of
the
position.
Paint.
The puck goes in the net. What's the call?
Probably goaltender interference there.
Even though interference has been initiated by Price.
Otherwise,
then we're getting into 1999 and the foot in the crease.
Okay, so just a minute now. If the shot comes from the point and the player that's in the crease has no influence on the goalie making the save from the point.
But he's saying Price moves into that player to make it influence.
And he doesn't have to move into that player to make the save. That's where you get into some problems.
That's where you go to replay, and the referee says, "You know what? The shot came from here. Price moved over here.
Yeah,
he should have been over here to initiate contact." Now, earlier this year against the Bruins, we saw a guy in the crease, did not touch the netminder, but he was in there for an established period of time. Mm-hmm. Didn't allow him to play his position, and the goal was called back. And at first we were like, there was no contact made.
But he was there too long. Are we going now to three in the key? Mm-hmm. Is that what we're doing now?
Because you cannot do... I actually asked the officials,
yeah,
and I got word back right away that I asked another guy, would you have made this call? Take a look at the play. And he said, yeah, he was in there. I believe it was Gregory Campbell. I cannot remember who was against, but it was Gregory Campbell that was in there for too long of a period of time and influenced the positioning or lack thereof of the netminder. And so it was the right call.
So that's what they're up against. An interesting debate, but I think if they can fine tune it and get 98% of them, but I think Gary's saying to the group, when you have it, that it's close to 100%, let me know.
Yeah.
And then we will move on.
Then we'll move it to the Board of Governors.
Then we'll move on it. But they want it. Gary told them a year ago that he wants it that tight. And that's what they're striving to do. Now, can they get the 30 guys? Can they get a consensus from the 30 GMs? That's going to be.
Is that ever possible?
No, but, you know, guys, you know, if they get it, typically, they're pretty good if it's a major issue in the league.
How does Gary address the general managers?
Yeah, he, really, really good. I mean, he you know, I think he talks about the importance of the meetings. He talks about the importance of them as a group because they are a group that really does influence the rules of the game.
How much would he talk about the need for financial prudence amongst general managers?
He wouldn't.
Not at all. The GM's meetings.
No, he wouldn't. Those days are long gone. The salary cap has taken all that off gear. When I was going there for 5 years in a row, they would put our budget up on the wall and X budget.
By the way, this is the story I was fishing for.
And ridicule you standing next to your owner.
Yep.
And your budget goes up on the wall. And then they'd put your points to your budget.
Oh.
And you're sitting there with your owner, and it was like, okay, you idiots, this is what you're spending, this is what you're getting for a result, and your owner's sitting next to you.
What was your budget?
I was always fine. I was always real low, but it was tough. Like if you got a team in those days with a $72 million payroll and you're 26 plays, it was like a tough meeting.
Rangers had a few of those.
Oh no, but those days ended when the salary cap came because now Gary says, You've got your
up
money.
To your cap.
You do what you want to do with it. You divvy it up, and then they sort of chuckle when these teams get in big-time cap trouble.
Yeah, let's get to last night, and we'll preview what's going on this evening around the NHL in a couple of moments. Dave Andrews, AHL president and CEO, still to come on Hockey Central at noon. In the meantime, you know, the notion of rock bottom is a tough one. We'll talk about the Maple Leafs and the Oilers here. I remember talking once to Darren McCarty. It's after McCarty wrote his book and talked about all the situations he had been in his life with the drinking and the drugs and the gambling and all that. And I asked him, I said, at what point, Darren, did you hit rock bottom? And Darren said to me, you know, I talked to my therapist about it, and he brought up a great point. You never hit rock bottom. All you do is decide to stop digging. So I'm not going to say this is rock bottom for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but guys, how much worse can it get? That opening 20 minutes yesterday, if there was a
opening
team
20, how about less, the opening five?
Less prepared to play a game in the NHL than the Maple Leafs. And Bernier gets the mercy hook, surrendering 3-on-4 shots. That last one was a laser by Pouliot. I don't know who's going to stop that one, but nonetheless. We've seen them lay eggs before, like, but that's Easter morning.
One win in 20-something road games. Like, it just – I watched Kessel after the game in his interview, and I don't know if I've seen many player interviews that bad where a guy is that beat up, that down, that frustrated, that whatever he is. Mm-hmm. This is your guy. This is your $8 million guy. I mean, his numbers over this stretch are abysmal. I've never seen, you know, a team. I mean, we've had them go off the cliff before. This has gone to a whole nother level, and they are beaten up. And I got to give Peter Horacek, I'll tell you, listen to Peter after the game, and basically saying, hey, boy, suck it up.
Yeah.
Suck it up. I got to give Peter some credit here. I know it's been abysmal. I don't know what kind of job he's done. How could you ever analyze what kind of job he's done with the mess?
How about his last 2 years between Florida and then here? I mean, how can you analyze?
Well,
but at least in Florida, they stayed a little bit competitive.
Right.
But the thing is, I mean, he's been the supply teacher for 2 years. And you know how the kids behave when the supply teacher is there.
Guys, when you take over a team and 3 weeks after you take it over, this article comes out that they're scorching the earth. What do you say to the group? Come on, boys, let's rally for the Leafs.
Well,
let's play for the local. Play for your future. But it happened long before the article came out. I get that. But I still go back to that article in the Globe and Mail that scorched the earth. I'm thinking, what idiot walked out of that owner's meeting and told that to the press?
Yeah.
That to me, to do that to your organization, you should be fired on the spot. I don't care who it is.
To do that to the players, Billy, your thoughts on this one?
To do that to the president of hockey ops.
To do that to the players who now have a message from management, which is,
what?
We're down on this team. We're finished with this team. There is apathy from the fans.
Yeah.
Should we be surprised? On the one hand, to your point, they're all pros and they're highly paid. And it had been going on. Management has given up on them. Fans have given up on them.
Can
we be surprised?
I get that it was a disaster a month before that. I get that. But this didn't help it. This certainly didn't help. They've had bad months before. Compounded it.
There's nothing except for a few guys. McWilliam comes up and he has, seven hits last night? Relatively speaking, besides being a professional, which is easy to say, sometimes probably harder to do, there's nothing for these guys to play for. Because even though guys like Kessel and Phaneuf, they've got their contract. They have nothing to worry about. They're back next year. No, in theory,
well,
right?
They're somewhere in the NHL next year.
You got a few kids that are coming up, and they're going to try and play hard, and they're going to try and do something. Playing for pride. I'm sorry. They're going into a place, by the way, in Edmonton, where while there you may have guys from the area, you know, on the team, maybe there's not much going on in Edmonton either. There's not much jam to that game, and they're beaten dogs. They're absolutely beaten dogs.
But I was with lots of 70-point teams. Okay,
it's a different attitude, though.
And you know what? You've gotta come up with some way to
Doug. Wait, this time
play
of year.
Yeah, better than this garbage.
That's what I'm saying. This time of year, if you're a 70-point team, you find young guys. You find guys that are journeyman playing
but
for
even
their job.
The best guys.
And you try and you find something fun. I was part of the Atlanta Thrasher organization for a while, and there were some god awful games that happened there at that time. But they would try to then tweak it to do something fun. There's no fun whatsoever here with this team.
But whether it's and to me, this isn't a coaching thing right now. This is the group in the room saying like. Enough, guys, we saw the excitement last week when they won a game. They won a game, and I mean, I look at Bozak and it looked like he won the Stanley Cup.
It was like 74 caps when they won the first road game, and they brought
the trash can on the
ice.
So, you know, it's and to try to evaluate what's going on right now with this group, you're wasting your time. They're not good enough to win a lot of nights right now with the lineup they're putting out there.
You want to get a quick thought on the Kadri hit? He does have a hearing. It's a phoner. The hit on Fraser last night behind the net, bent over. Picks the head.
I thought he picked the head more than the bent over. I guess he was over a little. I read somewhere at first, doesn't seem like any suspension hearing or call coming. Then I saw that there was. I was surprised when I heard there wasn't. I don't think it's a big one, but I do think that there was enough of head contact in that area. I know he's down, but he's blind. He's coming from the opposite side.
I think he gets it here.
I think he gets a couple of games, two games probably.
Now I don't know what he's got as he's a repeat offender. I don't know if it's for a headshot, but to me he gets it for that.
Elsewhere on the NHL last night, a big win by the Tampa Bay Lightning, doubling up the Montreal Canadiens on one of the worst passes we'll see all season from Max Pacioretty, leading to a gorgeous goal by Steven Stamkos. Billy, you covered this one last night on Sportsnet. Your thoughts on the Habs dropping one to the Bolts?
The first 30 minutes, they weren't good Habs. The second 30 minutes, they were really good Habs. But they were being beaten by the speed and the puck control and some major gaffes. Max Pacioretty took the heat for the big one. He thought that Markov was supporting and backing him up there. You know, Markov would have gone off the ice.
Was he looking for Markov or Gilbert on that
Markov.
One?
Gilbert's coming off the bench. He's coming over there. Okay. I think Markov was the one. They moved the puck up the ice. And we don't, on the TV side, we don't have the replay that shows everybody going bench side. Max Pacioretty thinks that he has D support, and he puts it back right to stand. He sees something out of the back corner of his eye.
Yeah.
And it's not his teammate. Anyway, but the first 30 minutes of the game, Habs were standing around at times defensively, not aware. They're a brutal starting team. We know that. Yeah. Tampa took a control of that. But the other thing is, once Plekanec scored that goal in the second, it was like energy. And they started getting puck control, but otherwise possession was all Tampa the first 30.
Victor Hedman was outstanding last night.
He was great.
Victor Hedman was fantastic.
Thought he was great.
He's been like that a lot of nights.
Yeah, and you know, before the injury, beginning of the season,
thought he was great last
couple weeks, all of a sudden, holy smokes.
Can I ruin one of my stars of the night?
Hold on to that. It's very important. You have Hedman? Okay, so hold on to that one.
You would say, like, 2 years ago, you would ask the question, who would you rather have, Max Pacioretty or Phil Kessel?
It's the no-brainer now.
No-brainer now?
Not that.
That 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, big body and Pacioretty, you always favor the big body guy. You always hope that he's going to get it going, but Pacioretty's become
it's Michigan over Minnesota in that one going away.
Hail to the victors.
He's become he's become a heck of a player. Yeah.
I love his anticipation.
He's 30 goals. Yep. And he does other things for you.
Killing penalties regularly. Yeah. Top four in the minutes and time on ice shorthanded.
If he's not scoring for Montreal,
that's him and Plekanec.
Man.
And there's pressure on him in the playoffs, but he came through last year. He was feeling some heat early in the Boston series or in the Tampa series, but he came on. And he's become a horse.
Scrappy game last night, too. We saw Mike Angelides go with Brendan Prust. Earlier, Gallagher got mixed up as well. So
Brendan Prust runs – they have their fight or whatever it was, and then he hits –
runs Bishop.
You got to love that. Is that goalie interference?
And it's his birthday.
Is that goalie interference? That would be easy, you know.
It's not like Probert on Keynes, but I get your point. He's taking a little bump out of him.
I mean, that's just great. You got three sweaters, blue sweaters coming around him right away. I loved it. No, I mean, you don't want to see the goaltender get hit. He holds up just enough.
It was a little bump, Billy.
How would you write that one up in the definition? The goalie goes out to play the puck. You cannot touch him. You can't touch.
Isn't that the rule?
Yeah. You can't touch him. So they can leave that one alone.
All right.
We all agree on that one.
We have a consensus. There you go. We'll see what happens in Boca if they get anything like that. So resembling what we just had around the table.
I just would like the panel today that comes across from our Elliots and Kiprios and Cox to just give me one thing that I haven't heard talked about for 6 months. Just give me one tidbit there.
Doug, we've been over this. It's the same agenda for 2 years.
Yeah.
That's what it's been like in at the general manager's meetings. All right, we'll hit a break.
One nugget.
We'll come back, have a look ahead to...
laying the gauntlet down from here.
I know.
Listen to him.
I know. Give me one morsel. Give me something
just
tasty.
Give me something to chew on here,
you Doug
guys.
A little flavor puck here. Come on, pass the puck already.
Seriously.
Dave Andrews, AHL president and CEO, will drop by. We'll have the three stars from last night. Spoiler, Billy's his headman. And we'll come back with a preview of this evening's matchups. This is Hockey Central at noon across the Sportsnet radio and television networks, simulcast stateside on NHL Network.
Hi, it's Pat Finelli from Pizza Pizza. Right now, get two medium pizzas with four toppings combined, two free dipping sauces, and six free Coke, all for only $18.99. Perfect for game night, a school night, or the office lunch. And ordering just got a whole lot easier. You can order from our award-winning mobile apps and even win more food. Click and pick Pizza Pizza today.
9-6-7-11-11-PIZZA-PIZZA. 9-6-7-11-11. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
And we're back on the air, Hockey Central at noon. Around the table, Jeff Merrick, Billy Jaffe, and Doug McClain. Quick little update from the general manager's meetings. These tweets from Elliot Friedman.
Hey, they brought us some meat.
I know. You got a little juice here. Looks like no final decision on overtime. More discussions to come on starting 3-on-3 or using American Hockey League model, but sounds like GMs do want change.
Great.
Further tablet or monitor to be added for referees for a coach's challenge-style event. With goaltender interference, lose a timeout if wrong.
Refs have final say.
Also, there will be discussion about NFL-style setup where in last minute everything gets reviewed. Also, refs will have final say on the call, Billy, to your point. And remember, any recommendations must go through competition committee and board of governors. We were talking off air, and I think we mentioned it yesterday on the program as well. We do see things like this in Hockey East.
Yeah, real quick, though, too. According to some other people, too, GM's told that the cap is still in the $71 to $72 million range. I think that's include. Would that include the inflator, then? Wouldn't that?
Player associations have to vote on that, and that is going to be a contentious issue. There are many that are, as you can imagine, well,
what's
approaching
the
free
with
agents.
The 5%?
I think that's it. I think the 71 or 72.
That's with the 5% inflator?
And if not, it might be 69.
There are a lot of players that are saying, thank you very much for playing off escrow. We're not going to go for the inflator. And a number of other pending UFAs who are saying, hang on a second, I voted for you. So you had your chance to make money. What about Papa?
Somebody gave me the example of you're making $1 million in a certain Canadian market, and you get close to 50% tax bracket, takes you to 500. Yeah. Then you take the 200 off for the escrow. Mm-hmm. That puts you down to 300.
Pretty quick.
Your million becomes 300. That can't be right, is it? That you lose, let's say 40 to 50% tax, and then you lose 20 more percent escrow.
Let's say you're playing in Montreal, so bingo, off the top, you're 50 plus.
Is that what it is in Montreal?
50 plus, chop you right down.
That gets you to 5.
You go escrow.
And then you got the 200 escrow, that gets you to 3.
Well, that's why Vinny didn't want to go to so Montreal, because that's $15 million right away he's handing over to the
You're telling
government.
Me in some Canadian market, or, you know, I mean, look, in the U.S., it's 39, 40% too. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
Well, New York State is high.
Yeah, I mean, you get dinged for 39 to 40.
Massachusetts.
So you're losing 40%, and then you're losing another. So you're losing 60% of your paycheck.
The escrow's 20%?
20% right now, I believe, yeah. I believe it's 20%
it 13,
right now.
Maybe
now,
that's
does that mean they're not going to get some back at the end of the year?
No, it does not.
But let's take Phil Kessel at $8 million. That's $1.6 million a year he's giving up in escrow. No wonder there's some contention over it.
You were asking quickly about Hockey East.
They
have monitors in college hockey. They have monitors in the just out next to the penalty box, right?
So the
there.
Officials go and they convene. Officials go and they have look.
We see that, and that's
one of the sensitivities as well. Dave Andrews is standing up. That is one of the sensitivities as well. Is lengthening the game too much?
And how often are they right when they go there? When the referees
do they're always right. According, they got it right this weekend to the letter of the law. They got it right.
Let's, Alan Andrews got it made because or Dave Andrews has it made because the NHL just tell him and then they do it and there's no hassle.
He did this one on his own, the 3-on-3.
This oh, he is, did?
This
okay.
Bravo, well, and that's why he's a folk hero around
Florida. Let's give him credit for that, then.
Let's bring him aboard. He is the president and CEO of the American Hockey League, and he is, as we have mentioned all program long, a folk hero in Florida amongst 30 general managers. He is, of
and
course,
in
Dave
Nova
Andrews.
Scotia. And in
absolutely.
Nova Scotia.
And he was a legend in Victoria when he was out there with the exactly. Cougars. And he's a legend on these parts as well. David, how are you today, sir?
Well, better now, thanks.
Well, how does it feel now that something you initiated this year seems to have curried much favor, much discussion, and some big thumbs up amongst 30 general managers in the NHL?
Well, it wasn't me personally, so we should get that straight. But I think our competition committee in the American League kind of took a bold step, and we were supportive of that. And I think, you know, when you realize our competition committee is made up of quite a few assistant GMs in the National Hockey League, it was sort of a little bit of subterfuge on the part of some NHL clubs to influence the American League to give this a try. So we weren't asked to test it by the NHL, which usually these types of things we are, but we went with it and it had great results. And I'm not sure where the GMs are with it today, but, you know, for us, it's been really successful.
Dave, take us back, though, to the initial meetings that you then had with your committees and your you know, the AHL people there. What was the biggest issue against it? And therefore, how much has it worked out, in your opinion, and how much do those people say, yeah, I was against it, but now I see the light?
Well, I don't think anyone was really against it. The competition committee wrestled with how to introduce it. And again, I'm not keeping track of what's happening down in Boca this morning, but you know, I think our competition committee really wrestled with whether to go right to it, or, you know, I think what we did was sort of a compromise to get through 3 minutes of a 4-on-4, see if it's been resolved, and then shift over and lengthen the overtime by a couple of minutes. So it was a way to introduce it and see how it worked without going entirely right to the 3-on-3. But it was unanimously supported within our competition committee and unanimously supported with our board in the way that it was structured. So my guess is if the NHL in fact does go down the road of adopting 3-on-3, we'll probably go to whatever format they select.
Dave, would you rather go right to 3-on-3, or are you uptight a little bit about the fact that it varies from game to game depending on a stoppage in play? You know what I'm saying? Like, if I get a minute of 3-on-3 in Adirondack and Syracuse gets 2.5 3-on-3, I don't like that.
Yeah, no, I think, Doug, I think having seen it now, my own personal opinion is that I would probably go right to it.
Right off the hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right off the hop. I think what we've seen is sometimes there's no stoppages. Like, we'll play through the first 3 minutes, and sometimes we have gone this year through a full 7 minute overtime without ever getting to 3-on-3.
Wow, really?
So yeah, I mean, you've off the topic, but one of the things that happens now when you stop fans from getting to their seats until there's a stoppage in play, if somebody goes for a hot dog, they can be out in that vomitory for a long time waiting to get back to their seats. And then for us, sometimes we just don't get to the 3-on-3 fast enough, but it's really entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and
it's been good for us. It settles a lot of games, a lot more than we did before in overtime, and it is fun to watch for the fans.
Just one more point before you get to Billy here is: have you had any conversation from coaches or NHL about their best players being used too much, especially in the American League, where you've got a tough schedule there,
and
the best players that extra 2-3 minutes a game? Any conversation about that?
We haven't actually seen that other than, you know, I've read about it, some of the comments from the Players Association. But within our league, actually, we're not seeing our games go any longer. Like, our games' average length last year, if you took all of the games together, was 61 minutes, and now it's 61.06. So, but obviously the better players are probably getting a little more ice time than they might have before. But the only time we've had a complaint from a coach all year has been after they've lost one.
Right.
Funny how that works.
Funny, yes. Shocking.
I used to like all the new rules till I lost because of them.
What about any complaints from players, or do you not hear that? To Doug's question, it's similar in the sense, you know, anywhere extra wear and tear, which you're not sure. But have you heard it at all, Dave, from any players?
Not directly, but in following news articles on it from within our league, there have been some of the goalies that don't like it. But for the most part, the forwards seem to really enjoy it.
I may be really dumb, but in my 22 years in the NHL, I never had one player ever complain to me about too much ice. I used to get complaints about not enough ice, but never too much.
One of the things that's interesting watching a 3-on-3 and that our officials have had to really pay attention to is just the illegal line change, because you end up with odd man rushes all the time and tired players, and that's where you get the guy jumping a little early, especially when you're starting in, with the long change.
You know, style, we were talking about this off the top of the program, where 5-on-5, the coach is very influential. 4-on-4, you could argue the coach is influential. How much influence do we see from coaching, Dave, when you get down to 3-on-3? Or is it an uncoachable situation? And to the point that Doug made off the top of the show, if you're a head coach, just make sure you have your best three players on the ice as often as you can.
I think everything's coachable. And what we've seen, what I've seen at games at least, is usually the first 10 or 15 seconds of the 3-on-3 is a bit of a feeling out process, but eventually a player sees an opportunity and he goes for it. And once that attempt on goal is made, generally you're looking at odd man rushes going both ways.
We're going to end up with the way coaching is today. We'll have three guys lined up at the blue line to make it. Coaches, I'm telling you, though, seriously, I think, and I don't know if Dave's seen it in 1 year yet, but coach, you've got to coach it. You've got to attempt to coach it. Like Dave was saying about illegal line changes, yeah, any advantage, sure, you can get, you've got to try to do.
We didn't coach the shootout, right, for a while, and now teams coach it. They practice it. They do it different ways. Hey, Dave, real quickly here, too, your league, you're not just developmental league for players, but officials as well. There's talk of at the National Hockey League level that they're going to be putting now monitors, tablets, whatever, in the penalty box area for them to go look at if there's a coach's challenge. Does that then mean that eventually we'll see it in the American League so these guys can practice it? I know it costs money and everything, but if you're going to be training the officials, you want them doing the same thing as they're developing in the American League as the NHL, no?
Good point.
Yeah, actually, we have monitors in the box now. That's how our video replay system works. So that would not be a big change for us, although we don't have the camera angles to look at goalie interference if that's what they're mm-hmm. talking about. But our officials actually manage their own video replay through a monitor in our penalty boxes.
So you've started a major craze, you know that, eh? I mean, you're a pretty innovative guy. But now what you've got a real hot button going on is everybody wants now to be a pro scout in the American Hockey League so they can do that California swing.
No, I already asked him. I saw Dave
Andrews has pissed off a lot of general managers because everybody is going to California to scout Bridgeport.
I already asked Dave a few weeks ago when I saw him at the Ace Bailey event. I said, I want to be the guy from the American League that just monitors that California division. That's it.
I want you to see Bridgeport play. Well, yeah, I can catch them in Ontario and San Jose and San Diego.
It's real easy.
I have to tell you, Doug, we've had quite a few applications to be the AHL representative on the West Coast.
Oh, I want that. I already put that in at the Bailey event, Dave. Come on.
That's great. That's outstanding. So that's wonderful. And you are a hero in Florida as well. And as much as people want to be the scout in California,
right,
now the NHL wants what Dave Andrews has with 3-on-3 in the NHL
as
well.
Congratulations just for a minute on this whole move. I mean, to appease, Dave, you've battled with this for 20 some years in the American League about close proximity to your farm team.
100%.
This seems to make great sense, and how you were able to pull it off between the East Coast League and the American League, it blows my mind.
Well, thank you very much, and it is a trend we're seeing. And as you know, the Jets have just we worked with them to move their team back to actually right to Winnipeg, and I think we're going to see more of that. And I think Doug, it's really all about, and you know this from your time in the NHL as a general manager, there is so much money being invested in players now at the American League level in a capped system in the NHL. It's one of the places that general managers believe they have the ability to make a difference. So we've gone from one full-time head coach back in the days when you were in the American League, and now we've got a full-time head coach, two full-time assistants, a full-time video coach, and then you've got the strength and conditioning guy, you've got the goaltending coach coming in from the NHL team, you've got the nutritionists and psychologists. And so the investment in players is so great that the NHL general manager really wants those players close to him so they can monitor what's happening and monitor the investment. It's not just about recalls. It's about seeing your players on a regular basis. So I think we're going to see this trend continue for sure.
You've had a huge effect lately on the AHL, of course, Dave, and now the NHL. Take the rest of the week off.
Thanks,
sir.
Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks. Good luck, bud.
We'll talk soon. Dave Andrews is the president and CEO.
My resume is going shortly the California
corridor. I was
going to
say,
corridor.
Yeah. Dave Andrews starts behind me.
A lifer.
Got to go quick. Yes.
Done a heck of a job in the American Hockey
League. Absolutely.
Continues
and
you
mentioned Nova
job.
Scotia. He took Victoria to the Memorial Cup, that team with Grant Fuhr and Bob McGill.
Lives in Western Mass.
Single level. That's right. Springfield guy is the head offices.
Yep.
All right. Back tomorrow on more Hockey Central at noon.